I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
Last word on Today FM.
Well, joining us for the Culture Club today is poet Dervla Meskell. Thank you very much, Dervla, for being with us.
Thanks, Matt.
To celebrate your first collection of poems that have been published, Finding Joy, Words to Capture the Beauty of Ordinary Life. Will you read one for us, please? Will you read Grab the Good Days?
I will. Thanks, Matt. Grab the good days. Treasure them. Chances are the good days are made up of small, seemingly trivial moments that together make for an incredible day. So today, make time to take that photo, write your thoughts, sit with someone who needs you, send that text, make that call. I promise it'll land right where you wanted it to. Time moves so fast and we are all so very busy. Your kindness matters, and through our small acts of kindness, we can make a better day, a better week, a better month, and a better life.
As well as being a poem, is that your credo? Is that how you live your life?
There used to be a little strip that I had on the kitchen cabinet that said, be kinder, I'm going to paraphrase now, be kinder than you need to be because everybody is going through something. And that was where the sugar and the porridge and everything was. So the kids, that was something that I felt... that if we could all, if the kids could be kinder, move through their lives kinder, hopefully the world, you know, would just be a little bit kinder and, you know.
Did they live up to it?
They tried and I tried. It became a very dirty old piece of aspiration, but we did do it and we did try.
The reason I ask that is, this is something that you've been living by for a long time, or is it something that was very much brought to mind when you got a cancer diagnosis 4 years ago?
No. So I think when I got cancer 4 years ago, it actually made how I'd been living more, it gave me more clarity as to how I was actually living, because obviously cancer brings you right to the present. You are right in the now. You don't get to question yourself too much. You literally, well, for me, I listened to my doctors. I took the medicine. I sat in their care, and luckily and very blessedly, I'm very well because of it. But I think my journey with Finding Joy happened, we'll say, many years before. But I think I was practicing it and I was, you know, getting my nuggets and trying to do my best. But when I actually got sick and I couldn't go out, I couldn't participate in the world the way I was able to before. Like my head even felt heavy. Like I, you know, my scalp was sore. Like everything was sore.
Was this because of the treatment or because of the cancer?
I actually don't know, because everything was part of everything. It was a full circle. So the cancer was in me and the medicine had to kind of kill you to make you stronger.
Yeah, so what type of cancer was it and what sort of treatment did you need?
So I have multiple myeloma. So I had stem cell treatment. So you go into the Birkett ward in James's, and I was there for 3 weeks in isolation, and basically my blood regrows. Like, they took my blood in December, kind of cleaned it, and then give it back to you. This magic happens. So basically, you're looking at a brand new version of Dervla, like 2.1.
And did it influence what you were writing in the poetry as well?
I think when I was gathering it, when the book started to, you know, raise its head that it could become a book, putting it together and, you know, putting the thoughts together of it, I found there was pieces that I had obviously written back in 2012, 13, that actually still resonated, even though I was now out of the chaos of that mothering part. I was now in this finding myself again. So looking back on the pieces and maybe tweaking them to resonate with me now. So it was like part of the journey. So it was kind of a period of time from, I use my middle guy, Dunica, as my kind of guidepost because he was about under 13s and he's 27 this year. So it was those, that period of time in my life. And cancer makes you stop. Cancer makes you refocus. The finding joy aspect became very crucial.
Yeah, but you say cancer made you stop and refocus, but essentially you had done that over a decade earlier anyway.
Yeah, so I had met a friend on the side of a pitch and she asked the question, you know, when is it our time? You know, when is it my time? And I kind of was like shocked, like never, you know, no. Now we have to mother. Now we have to, we now have to just keep going and put the shoulder to the wheel. And when I thought about that, it was kind of ludicrous. Like, you know, yes, we all put our children to the forefront. But when you're working and when you're mothering and when you're partnering, something has to give.
Were you still a serving member of An Garda Síochána at that stage?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I retired 3 years ago in May, this May coming. So I did 33 years.
Did you find joy as a Garda? But the reason I ask that is you will meet so many different people as a member of An Garda Síochána. You're going to meet really good people. You're going to meet not such good people. But do you find joy in your interactions as a Garda in all the situations?
I think for me as a member of An Garda Síochána, I wanted to be that chances are you are meeting people at their darkest. Chances are, you know, you're attending scenes. You are going from one scene, like you could go to, from an accident to giving a talk to a fifth class in a school to a domestic to whatever is required in a 12-hour shift. And what I felt I did well was I brought the full, my whole self to it. I tried to lead with kindness. Like most of us have been stopped by An Garda Síochána. And most of us panic because we think we've done something wrong. I remembered stopping, you know, when I had to do checkpoints, and I wasn't a very good checkpoint, like I hated doing them. I remember stopping cars and being very aware that, be kind. This person is more than likely going to be kind back. They're going to ask you, how are you? And you're going to ask. And it's until you're led into another conversation. If we can just lead, I tried to lead with kindness.
Okay, let's get to your culture club choices, and we will allow you to use family members when it comes to choices.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yes. Okay. Thanks.
But this is about you, and which is why I've introduced it as you and your poetry. And start for me, music. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you have a daughter who is very involved in music. But what about yourself? What did you grow up with? What do you remember first?
Well, I remember Santa bringing me a cassette player. You know, the old-fashioned black cassette players that we would have all, when the top 10 was on, you'd be trying to press record, press.
Recording press, illegally from what was going on the radio.
Sorry.
Good future Garda.
Yes, yes. Top 10. But I remember I got an ABBA CD and I don't have that still. Some of the things I still have, because when I did get EPs and or LPs, I did keep them, but I don't know where it might now. Chances are it's in my mother's attic. But it was an ABBA CD or cassette, and Dancing Queen was on it, and it was just the average, you know.
That's from the album Arrival. So let's hear Dancing Queen.
Thank you.
ABBA's Dancing Queen from the Arrival cassette, as it was, yeah, which is the first choice of Dervla Meskel today in the Culture Club. But you also wanted to mention a bit of music that was very important to you as a young adult from Mary Black.
Oh, yes.
What's this?
Oh, so I was in London, had followed a heart, and then got my heart broken. And Mary Black's Once in a Blue Moon was the song I played over and over and over again, trying to get over that broken heart. And I eventually came home from London and actually joined Ungar the Síochána. So it was that time of my life. So it was 1990 or 89, 90, that summer. And I joined Ungar the Síochána very quickly after that. So the broken heart led me to Ungar the Síochána.
Via Once in a Very Blue Moon by Mary Black.
I found your letter in my mailbox today. You were just checking if I was okay. And if I miss you, well, you know what they say. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. Just once in a very blue moon. And I feel one coming on soon. No need to ask.
Our American correspondent Cal Thomas will be delighted because he's obsessed with Mary Black.
Oh, her voice. Her voice. Oh my, I was literally transported back to that room in London. So that's lovely.
And whatever happened to the fellow who broke your heart?
Oh, he got left. He got left, I'm afraid. He just got left.
Good. Okay. And then what favourite album are you nominating for us and why?
This one is it was a Simon and Garfunkel, and I was sitting thinking about this because my kitchen table at home in Castle Dawson is the dining room table that I grew up at, and literally sitting there, when I play that LP and particularly the Boxer, I'm brought back to my Leaving Cert, to some essay I was trying to do, and sitting at that table, and the smell of my Mr. Sheen or whatever it was that my mother polished the table with, and that song in the background brings me, and I don't know when I did my Leaving Cert, whenever that was, but Simon and Garfunkel just in the background, and that EP is in our house now, and yeah, it's one of those songs that just brings me to my Leaving Cert.
A lot of people try and get away from remembering their Leaving Cert.
Yeah, and I'm even thinking about it now. It makes me kind of shiver a little
bit. Okay, a little bit of Simon and Garfunkel, The Boxer.
Laying low, seeking out the poorer quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. La-la-la. Asking only workmen's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la.
Dervla, I'm just wondering, is that something you bought for yourself, or was it something that your parents had bought, or siblings?
My daddy would have been a big music. He would have bought lots of EPs and lots of LPs and then lots of cassettes, because obviously in the car we'd have driven and the cassettes were in the car. My dad would have had the LPs. I actually don't know. I don't know how I have it, but it was the one that I took from home. So maybe I shouldn't say that because my brother and my sister might be upset. But I took that LP with me. And maybe they took their own ones that they were interested in.
There's a thread in the type of music you like, though, coming across, because we asked you for favourite band or artist and also, I think originally a star in the 1970s. You've gone for James Taylor.
Oh, my gosh. James Taylor, I lived in America for a little while and, you know, I drove from New York down to South Carolina and windows open and this absolute fabulous, you know, that hot air that we don't necessarily get in Ireland, that when you open the windows, it's this gorgeous humidity. And I remember just listening to James Taylor. And I don't know if I knew James Taylor before I lived in America. I don't know when that happened, but then I've seen him live. I have all his, pretty much all his albums on CD at the time. And the Never Die Young was one that I really liked because I felt I had grown up with him at that point. We were kind of, I know he's a little bit older than me, but I felt at that point we were at the same place in my life. So, it just reminds me of windows down, humid air, driving in America.
Let's hear the title track from that album you mentioned, Never Die Young. Taylor there. Now, Dervla Maskell, the last thing before we get to the break is your first opportunity to mention one of your children. Okay.
Yes.
So best concert you've been at. You have a favourite gig, which is quite recent.
Yeah.
Last December in the Button Factory, your daughter Nell.
Yeah. So what's been interesting watching Nell in the industry and working hard and going to these different small venues and then, you know, each venue is a new place for me to go to because I wasn't really a gig goer. I wasn't permitted to go. I remember to Bruce Springsteen when everybody went. Was that in 19? Again, here I am not knowing. But I remember sitting on a wall and all my friends going to Bruce Springsteen. So when I see Nell going and being in these gigs, and so she was in the Button Factory in Dublin and she had the full band and her new EP, Closest We Get, has a violin aspect to it. And so hearing that live, watching her grow in the music, in her own music, finding her voice within her own writing has been pretty, pretty amazing. I mean, it's a really, really tough industry. You know, you've got to just keep believing yourself and writing your music and trusting something will just click.
We have a little bit of Nell singing Middleman for a concert in the Islington Assembly Hall in November. Nell Maskell, their middleman. Favourite gig of her mother, Dervla Maskell, who's with us for the Culture Club.
Yeah.
So let's get to movies. Mm. And before we mention your young fella, give us what you sort of, your comfort movie that you love going back to.
Well, anything that doesn't have death and doom and gloom and sadness, which is usually not what my son is all about, sadness and gloom. But
You must have liked Hamlet.
Yes, I did. I did. I thought that was like, oh, it was gorgeous. But I was thinking about this because I wanted to figure out what made me really happy. And so films, rom-coms, easy Sunday watching, easy. And so I did think about it and I thought about Wimbledon, which is a film, two tennis players, tennis, obviously, and Paul Bettany and Kirsten Dunst is in it. And there's a scene in this film where they're at a sushi bar and he looks at her this certain way, just a tiny look. And my heart melted. I just went, oh gosh, we all want to be looked at like that. So, and then David Gray's song comes up, This Year's Love. Da, da, da. And I just thought it was just, it's a nice film. It's a nice film. It's not, you know, it's not going to make your brain melt.
But the other one that you've given us, and this is your favourite, is it, of the movies that Paul's been in? All of Us Strangers with Paul and Andrew Scott.
Well, All of Us Strangers, Andrew Scott is, for me, one of our amazing actors.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore him. I also met him, so I feel like I actually can adore him. This film for me, at the Irish premiere of it, Andrew spoke and he said that when he was 16, it was illegal for him to hold hands. And I just was blown away by it. I was blown away by the idea.
You'd have been expected to arrest him.
Just think about that. That to me, like, is just beyond. And I was sitting beside his mum, who has sadly passed away. And that was the first time I met her. And the two of us watched this film together. And afterwards, the music in it is literally what I danced to in the dance. You know, literally, it was like everything we danced to. And I didn't even remember, like, the words. They didn't matter at the time. But then when I heard Andrew saying that and then looking at the film based on that, the words of those songs just took on another meaning for me. I think it's All of Us Strangers is a watch. I think it's really sad, but I think it's a lovely watch.
We have a scene in which both Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal are in this scene.
Drink. It's Japanese. It's meant to be the best in the world, but I couldn't tell you why. So.
No, thanks.
Okay, how about I come in anyway? If not for a drink, then for whatever else you might want.
I think that's a good idea.
Do I scare you?
No.
Well, you don't have to do anything if I'm not your type.
There's vampires in my door.
Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal in a scene from All of Us Strangers. So, Dervla Maskell, you've given us quite a list of plays and musical.
Yeah.
You clearly love going to the theatre. You've picked as one of them, Asking for It, based on the book by Louise O'Neill. Why so?
So, again, my son Paul, when he decided to go to the Lear and go into acting, he opened my eyes to plays I would never have known, probably books I would never have read. And so I read Louise O'Neill's Asking for It, and then it was made into a play. And it is a play for our time. It's small town anywhere. It doesn't, you know, any Ireland it happens to be, but it could be based anywhere. And it is about consent. It's, I mean, asking for it is exactly what it's about. And it, when you see a play that's played by young people, so it's all young people and the conversations that are happening and you're going, oh my God, no, 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 no. I was very taken by it. I thought that Louise O'Neill hit the nail on the head with her book, and the play was done in Cork and in the Abbey, and it was quite astonishing. You know, I think the audience caught their breath.
Another one that you like is by Jez Butterworth, Mojo.
Oh, yeah. So what I've learned is our theatre schools, like the Lear and the Gate and all the different schools, I presume, do graduate plays. And you can go and see them, which I didn't know that. I thought you'd have to be the mammy and daddy and whatever. And I went to see, and Paul was in it, but it was called Mojo. And again, a black comedy, very black, but it was the first time that I kind of went away saying, Paul can act. That I, as a mum, like, oh, okay, we can trust the process that this might actually work for him. You know, because up until then, like, he's...
Why, were you treating it like it was a little hobby for him and he'd do it for so long and then maybe he'd go and get a real job, become a Garda or something like
yeah,
that?
Well, yeah, well, now, there you go. I think when your child says something like, I want to be a singer-songwriter or I want to be an actor or a doctor, you know, you have to get the points for that. You have to have the talent for this. To be an actor, Paul had done a TY show and a couple of musicals after that. Deciding to be an actor was quite a like, whoa, okay. Like, do we need CAO points? How do you do it? So, and the other thing is that when you go into, and I can only talk about the Lear, is it's like he went to monk school. They go in deep dive. You don't see them till third year. So if you're shocking, that's a lot of, you know, a lot, you've got to sit there as a mammy and go, oh my gosh, can you do this? This is going to be real. And so when I saw Mojo, I remember Dunica was with me and he was in boarding school and I dropped him back to boarding school that night and he looked in the window and he says, I think he's going to be okay. And the two of us kind of went, yeah, because that was a play that had to bring you into East End London. It's dark. It's, you had to get there. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't just, I think plays bring you to the place and a good play really brings you there and makes you scared. And I was scared. I laughed, but I was, yeah.
And you also have on your list a production of The Great Gatsby.
Yeah. So Paul, actually, from, I would say, that era, he got to play Gatsby in The Great Gatsby, in The Gate, where they did it as a totally immersive. So you dressed up, you went to the gate, and it looked like the mansion, you know, like yes. The Gatsby mansion. And I'm not necessarily a person who likes immersive theatre. Don't necessarily want to be in the scene. But watching everybody dress up, like, it was phenomenal. Like, men in their trilbies and their little, you know, outfits, and women dressed up with their feathers, and great cast, great music. That was kind of his first professional kind of role-y thing.
I'm getting very near to the end of this, so I'm not going to be able to discuss the musical Les Miserables,
no,
which you love.
Okay. Yeah.
And the TV, I'm going to let you know, you're not a big TV person.
I don't think the TV wasn't huge when we were growing up. So I remember Saturday mornings, the monkeys, and that bit of fun of just after swimming, sitting, having flapjacks. It was very, very ordinary.
Well, I want to finish though on the buried treasure we asked everyone. Mm-hmm. And what you've said is diaries.
Yeah.
Tell us why. Your own diaries and other people's.
Yeah, I think diaries are so interesting. I think they are extraordinary vista into, and I love to voyeur. I like looking at people's kitchens. I like, you know, a bit of car crash TV is always good. So Michael Palin's diaries particularly is just one that goes from his Monty Python up until 2009. And so he's got different stages. And he writes his diary, like the weather. So he does the weather, where he was, and very conversational. And I've kept diaries probably since I went to the Gaeltacht, really badly. You know, I'd get as far as June, or I'd get as far as, you know, November, and then it would be. But they're all up in the attic. And that's like a buried treasure of a time that when my kids have to go into the attic to clear it out, they'll find a little bit of their mum at 14 or 20 or whatever.
Do you still keep a diary?
I probably journal more than I keep a diary. So my thoughts are a little bit more airy-fairy than today is, like, you know, your original diary. Dear diary, you know, I kissed a guy or whatever.
And followed him to London and got your heart broken.
Needed Mary Black to save me.
Okay, but of course you also are writing poetry, and the first book, Finding Joy, is available now. Dervla Meskell, it's been lovely having you with us here on The Last Word. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For taking the time. A big thank you to my production team. Back tomorrow at 4:30. Until then, from me, Matt Cooper, have a very good evening.
The Last Word on Today FM.